CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Good morning and welcome to City Talks Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in Business, and every Sunday I'll be taking a look at some of the week's business news and talking to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider northwest region. This week I'm joined in the studio by international entrepreneur Tony Caldera, who is also the chairman of the Liverpool Conservative Association, and we'll also be joined a little later on by Michael Taylor, the editor of leading Northwest business publication, Insider. It's been an interesting week in the world of Liverpool business. Our city's involvement in the Shanghai Expo appears to have got off to a flying start. Further details have emerged about the business cabinet post that new council leader Joe Anderson plans to appoint. And speculation has started about where the dreaded cuts programme is going to hit hardest from the emergency budget announced by new Chancellor George Osborne. Tony, welcome. First, for those who don't know who you are, I mean, there's probably only one or two people out there now, but can you explain a little about your background and your existing business interests?
Yeah, again, Caldera Limited is the UK's leading cushion business. We've also got an exciting operation in China where we have a factory there with a couple of hundred staff there. We've got an operation in New York, and we also own a retail chain called Fabric Warehouse.
And that's going all fine and dandy for you this year?
So far, so good. We had a very good end to 2009. All four of the businesses within the group had their record quarters. First quarter of 2010 was a little more difficult. We were hit by the snow at the beginning of the year from the retail side. And also, unfortunately, we were involved with the Ethel Austin's and Au Naturel collapse, whereas we were owed some money from the company there. So the first quarter has been a little bit tough, but we're back on track now. Good order book, and we're ready to go and fighting on in 2010.
I didn't appreciate you got caught up in the Ethel Austin's thing. Was that a bit of a surprise for you? Because it'd been rescued, hadn't it? And new people, new management structure in place. I think people were expecting it to start to actually progress and motor a little bit beyond where it eventually ended up.
Yeah, a lot of people with the Ethel Austin's programme, they were quite surprised because it had been reported in the media in the city that they were looking at opening new stores, taking the business forward. But unfortunately, when we actually got into the nitty-gritty of it, when the administrators were called in, it was clear that that hadn't happened. And unfortunately, a lot of people were left owed a lot of money.
Did any companies go bust as a result of that, you know?
I'm not sure whether companies have gone bust. I know it's put a lot of my competitors, ironically, into trouble because they were much more exposed than we were to the company. But there's a lot of local businesses whose main customer was Ethel Austin's or Au Naturel, who've had quite a few problems. A lot of the landlords were hit very hard. And as a retailer, I'm not normally that concerned about landlords, but on this particular occasion, it was unfair, some of the things that happened. And again, a lot of local landlords, for example, is going to be the Knowsley Business Park factory that and the warehouse that Ethel Austin's were running, that's now closed. There's a lot of local jobs gone. Apparently the business is going to move to Manchester, or what's left of the business is going to move to Manchester, and there's a lot of unhappy people in Merseyside.
When you look at big brands like Ethel Austin and Woolworths was another, now that you're involved in the retail sector, do you think that those brands partly failed as a result of failing to modernise themselves in terms of the brand and the marketing and so on?
That's part of the failure. In this particular case, it was, you know, a lack of financial control in more often than not. But some of the Woolworths and other stores of the like, they just didn't move with the times, as you suggested. They were slow on the uptake with the internet. They were slow on the uptake with rebranding and moving with the market. Some of these, Woolworths, for example, was a very big beast and was a very slow-moving oil tanker, and it couldn't quite move fast enough in the fast-moving world that is retail in Britain in 2010.
When you've got a retail offer, how difficult is it to stay focused on particular products? Because you must have opportunities on a week-by-week basis to introduce new goods into the store, new products. How difficult is it to resist that and to focus on what you're good at? Because one of the things, I think this clearly did apply to Woolworths, was that you go in there and you didn't really know what they were selling in the end, you know, and it was such a mess and a mishmash of offers that, you know, I think people now, they just like to go in, know where they're going to get what they need and out again, you know, the likes of Tesco, Sainsbury's, all these supermarkets, very well planned, you know, where you're going into the supermarket to get your fruit and veg, to get your bread, to get your... And it just seemed to me, whenever I went into a Woolworths, you were wandering around for a while and they were selling all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, they definitely lost the direction. There's an old cliche in retail that retail is detail and they forgot the detail. What they did is they were too disorganised. They didn't have focus. For example, Fabric Warehouse, my own retail chain, we stick to what we're good at. We know where our niche is. We know where our strengths are and our weaknesses are. And in retail, it's so competitive, especially in the downturn that we have as well. And with consumer demand being weaker than it has been for years, it's really important that any retailer who wants to not only survive but to grow and to thrive needs to focus on where they're strong, where they're weak, and just stick to the strengths. That's the answer, really. It's just, you know why your business is successful if you have a successful business and stick to it, especially during a downturn like this.
I'll come on to your manufacturing business in a second, but if it can stick with retail for the time being, we've obviously seen with Liverpool One a massive boost in terms of the retail offer in Liverpool. And Grosvenor have done a fabulous job in terms of going back to that marketing and promoting of its offer. We are, though, seeing some signs that parts of the city are beginning to struggle a little as a result of not really being included in that whole offer and promotion. The independent retailers, I had Chris Lee in a few weeks ago, of course, had Microzine up at Bold Street, which got into trouble, unfortunately, is closed now. And he was saying, you know, although it's been fantastic for the city, Liverpool One has actually perhaps started to damage retailers elsewhere in the city. Is there anything that either they or the city need to do to actually become more included within that overall Liverpool retail offer?
Well, first of all, I'd say that, you know, Liverpool One's been a tremendous investment into the city. I mean, £1 billion of private sector funding has been hugely significant, and the amount of jobs and, you know, new investment that's come in as a result of Grosvenor and Liverpool One's been outstanding. Inevitably, when you bring the timing considerations in, don't forget when Liverpool One was planned, the economy was moving quite nicely. It was, you know, retail sales were ticking along very comfortably. When Liverpool One opened just before and just as the economic downturn really hit, what's inevitably happened is some of the more marginal retailers, the ones who perhaps aren't as efficient as some of your main high street chains, have struggled for two reasons. One, because they're not now in the best pitches in town, and also they don't have the financial backing that some of the main high street chains have. Now, they've been unable to get the funding from banks, which has been a bit of a shame. And of course, it's important that as we take the city forward and as the new city administration comes in and looks at some of the things that are going to happen, that all the retailers' views are taken into consideration, and that we make sure that there are no kind of little no-go areas for retail in the city centre. What we don't want is little patches of no-go zones where there are no stores and no shops. When you even see that on the likes of the Church Streets and the Whitechapels, and who would have ever thought that there'd have been gaps on Church Street? Yeah. It's incredible to think about that. And, you know, I'm sure that once the economy picks up, once retail spending picks up, that those gaps will be filled, and eventually, you know, the new breed of retailers will come in and replace some of the older ones and some of the Woolworths and the Ethel Austins and some of the retailers that we've talked about.
And Lewis's, of
and
course.
And Lewis's, of course, that. Yeah, especially in the city. Yeah. So hopefully this new generation and this new wave of retailers can be encouraged both locally and nationally to fill up and take up the slack. Yeah. And if that happens, then Liverpool will be a premier destination for shopping, not only in the northwest, but probably within the UK.
You mentioned banks there, Tony. Again, your experience at the moment, are they getting easier to deal with?
Very slightly. Again, I'm still very disappointed with the banks in general. Caldera Limited and its other businesses are strong companies. We've got a strong balance sheet, and frankly, we don't really need the banks as much as other businesses do. But even companies like mine that have the strength in depth, still, when we're coming with proposals, it's still got to go to credit committees. It's still got to, you know, every single detail is actually scrutinised. It doesn't really matter that I've been an entrepreneur for 20 years and have got a really successful track record behind me. They're still looking at it as if I was a startup, which is quite disappointing, not only for me, but I'm thinking if Caldera's having this problem, you know, heaven help people who are just generally trying to start up and trying to make a, you know, a new business and get their own companies going again, because it's still very difficult for them. And this is why the new government has got to make the priority for the banks to actually start lending again to good small and medium-sized companies, not only in retail and in manufacturing, but throughout the region and throughout the economy. Mm. Because if the banks starve the new companies and the companies that perhaps are in a little bit of trouble of cash flow, then those companies will go to the wall. And it would be such a shame if companies that can actually survive a downturn get almost to the end of the downturn, where we're hoping, you know, everybody hopes that the economy is going to recover fairly quickly. It would be such a shame if these companies who've gone so far to actually survive the downturn right at the end, at the 11th hour, suddenly fail because the banks fail to give them the cash and the cash flow. Yeah. So let's hope that doesn't happen and the region's businesses can actually get back and be supported by the banks.
It's a point we can explore a little further on later with Michael Taylor, that, because obviously Vince Cable is going to have a big role to play in terms of the banks and how they work and operate in the future. But I mentioned in the intro, Tony, Shanghai and the expo that Liverpool is involved in. We're the only UK city that's got an involvement in what is an absolutely huge expo. Millions of people, quite literally, will be seeing Liverpool's wares. I think that a number of private sector companies now have got behind it. I know Grant Thornton are going over there this week. We've seen other businesses get behind what is an exciting initiative. Your big manufacturing plant is in China. You know the Chinese market well. You've been an advocate of this partnership and this link up. So the reports coming back must give you cause for optimism.
I'm very pleased with that. I've said all along, as you just mentioned, that you know, I believe that it's a good opportunity for the city, especially for the city to showcase itself in the world's fastest growing economy. There are millions of people going to see our stand in the expo, and hopefully with a little bit of luck that will encourage them to invest in Liverpool, to visit Liverpool, to study in Liverpool, to actually raise the profile of our city in China is an enormous thing to do at this time in the, you know, in the world economy and the economic cycle, because China is going to be the biggest economy in the world at some point if the current trends continue. And if Liverpool is seen in China as a leading player and a major city, that can only be a good thing, and it's great news that it started very well.
And it's an international expo, isn't it? So it's not just China that we're being able to showcase the city to. It's lots and lots of other businesses from different countries, European and Asia wide.
That's right. I think there's over 100 countries and regions, as the Chinese like to call them, represented. And I think with a good following wind, it's not just about the Beatles and Liverpool and Everton football clubs and things like that. You know, that this city has an awful lot to offer, and its businesses also have a lot to offer. And let's hope that it can be the first step for many businesses that are actually involved in it into working in China with the rest of the world as well, and taking their businesses to the next level.
Yeah. Again, just in terms of the overall global economy, and, you know, we always get told that the economic downturn did affect the whole of the world. What's been the impact in China?
It's been a lot less than here. I mean, I've gone on record without getting too political. You know, they always laugh when Gordon Brown said it's a global recession. He said, well, there's no recession in China, mate, in so many words. But in Chinese, of course. But what was actually...
Say it in Chinese.
I can say a little bit, but I don't want to embarrass anyone who actually understands Chinese, because my accent's not the best. That's a good excuse, isn't it? But the Chinese economy has been still motoring along 6, 7, 8%, 10% at the turn of this year. 10% growth. I mean, that's nobody's recession, come on. And the Chinese have been very clever in the way that they've looked to focus their economy on manufacturing. They've invested, you know, they've not leveraged, they've not borrowed too much. In fact, they've actually borrowed to the rest of the world money so they can actually buy their goods back. It's a dream situation for the Chinese. And as a result of some of the hard work that the Chinese people have done, then you know, China is still growing rapidly and will continue to do so. Having been to China already this year, I'm looking to go again, you know, three or four more times during the year. I can't see that growth stopping unless there is a you know, unless the Chinese stock market bubble bursts or the property bubble bursts. There's a lot of growth still left in China. And I think that it's very important that this region gets involved with China, and the Expo is a perfect platform to do that.
Mm. How are the various government agencies in China operating now? Because I've not been there for 7 or 8 years, and it was just at the point that they were starting to embrace market economics and move away from absolute state control and communism. Has that been an easy transition for them?
It's been an awkward transition for the politicos, for the people actually involved in government, but for the people it's been a revelation, because they've been released, the shackles have come off. To get rich is now glorious in China. It's actually...
So they're actually entrepreneurs now being encouraged.
That's what a lot of people in this country don't understand, that in China, to be your own boss is the number one career choice of graduates. Mm. They want to set up their own businesses. There are going to be millions of Chinese businesses that are going to be created in the next few years. They're going to compete not only in China but around the world. And that's why it's important that you know, the new government and the region understands what's going on over there. And in terms of the agencies, we've found that, you know, there's almost like an internal market in China where all the different regions and provinces are actually competing for this inward investment. Mm. And they do some very good deals. For example, Caldera China, when it first set up, paid no income tax for the first, I think it was 3 years, and then 50% of the standard rate for years 4 and 5. Mm. You know, incredible incentives. When you actually think about it, most startups don't make that much money in the beginning. Mm. So it's not that big an incentive. But when you hear the headlines, mm. it really catches your ear, and it really makes you think, oh, that sounds like a good deal. I might have a go at that. Mm. And, you know, they've been very successful in bringing billions and billions of pounds worth of foreign investment into the country. And as a result, their economic growth is continuing now.
Mm. What city are you actually... what province are you in?
We're in Zhejiang province, which is just behind Shanghai. Yeah. Behind Shanghai, there's Jiangsu province, there's Zhejiang province, there's several, you know, very entrepreneurial provinces which are like economic powerhouses in China. Zhejiang is one of those. We're just outside a city called Hangzhou, which ironically is also showing in the same hall as Liverpool is. Oh, okay. In the Expo. And that's a very dynamic part of China.
And what's the population of those sorts of cities? Yeah. Because sometimes I don't think people actually get the scale of this country.
Well, Hangzhou isn't even in the Chinese top 10 cities, and it has 6 million people, which is nearly as many as London. It's incredible. Zhejiang province on its own has nearly as many inhabitants as England. I think it's got about 40 million plus. I think England's now about 50 million, something like that. Yeah. This 1.3 billion people is a huge amount of people. You just can't get your head around, you know, 20 plus times the size of the UK. Mm. Each province has more or less the size of a British population. Yeah. And this is why the actual, once that kind of mass of people actually get the opportunity to start trading and to form their own businesses and to trade and compete globally, that China's rise is only just beginning, and there's still an awful long way to go in this, which is why, again, going back to it, it's great for the city to be involved in Expo. Mm-hmm.
How do you think the Chinese consider the UK?
The Chinese have a good, strong opinion of the UK. They think the UK is a cool place. You know, they like our culture.
Because they've met you, Tim.
Well, you know how it is, Frank. But, you know, they've got things like the culture, the football, the sport, you know, the youth aspect of it, the pop music. Mm. The young people in China actually aspire to have a British way of life in many respects, and an American way of life as well, prepared. It's a very Anglo-Saxon driven thing. Mm. They think that Anglo-Saxon culture is cool, even though some of their parents might not agree with them. Mm. You know, they want to do what we do, essentially. Mm. And they
and
want
that,
to study,
you know,
here
that
and learn English.
That we have of students here must be a massive help in that respect.
It is, but it's only just the beginning. Again, most people don't realise that there are as many Chinese students that want to study in Britain as there are British students. I'll say that again. There are as many Chinese students who want to study in Britain as there are British students. It's an incredible opportunity for the city and for the country that we have missed. Again, I have spoken to George Osborne about this. You know, they are aware of the situation and the huge opportunity that we have of actually boosting the sector and the education sector, especially here where we've got three good universities in the city, to actually bring more students in from China is a terrific opportunity with enormous potential, which could actually not only help fund the universities, but actually also help our British students get through university as well.
Yeah. And just briefly turn into the manufacturing sector, because, you know, I think one of the sad things, in a sense, in our country now is we don't seem to make as much as, well, we don't make as much as we used to. We've stopped making things to a large extent, and we've started to be a country that imports rather than exports. You're in an area of manufacturing which clearly has been profitable for you. Do you think manufacturing can ever come back to the UK? Not necessarily to the same level that it was at, but can we get more Caldera limiteds, if you like, emerging over the next two, three, four years?
Well, there's no reason why not. And as a country, we need to have that balanced economy, because to have too much emphasis on financial services and on retail and, you know, the kind of, you know, the service sector, the kind of cool, trendy areas of the economy, you know, we do need to make more things. Only 15% of our economy is manufacturing based, which clearly isn't enough when you look at the likes of the Germanys and even the Japans and some of, and even the US. They've got a lot more manufacturing as a percentage of their total GDP than we have. We need more successful manufacturing businesses in high tech manufacturing, especially, and looking at green and, you know, environmentally friendly technologies. We need to be focusing on these kind of things where we can compete. In some respects, whether we're actually manufacturing computer games or whether we're actually manufacturing, you know, high-tech cars in Hale Wood or whatever it is, there's lots of opportunities for this region, and we must take them. We must take them.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. This is Frank McKenna with City Talks Business. Sunday morning, I'm with Tony Caldera, local entrepreneur and also the chairman of the Liverpool Conservative Association. We're just having a chat about the Shanghai Expo, China's success and manufacturing in Liverpool. Very quickly, Tony, did the Capital of Culture have any sort of exposure in China?
Again, I wouldn't know too much about that specifically, but again, I would expect that as part of the Expo presentation, I think the cultural element, I think, is one of the months and one of the themes that the presentation committee will be putting forward. And hopefully, as China loves our culture and really wants to be part of it, then Liverpool could be the key city there.
Right. Well, after the break, Tony's going to be staying with me, and we're going to be joined by Michael Taylor, the editor of Northwest Insider magazine, looking at Liverpool City Council's new regime, their ideas to have a business representative on the cabinet, and also, what does the Chancellor George Osborne have in store for us in his emergency budget? Join us after the break. See you in a moment.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Right, welcome back to City Talks Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm joined in the studio this week by Tony Caldera, and on the phone now by the editor of Insider magazine, Michael Taylor. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, Frank.
We're just having a chat about Liverpool City Council's change of regime before we look at what's happening at a national level. I don't think it was a massive surprise to anybody that Labour took control of Liverpool City Council again. Joe Anderson has announced that he's going to appoint a business representative onto his cabinet. Is that something that's happened in other areas of the North West, or is it quite a unique appointment, Michael?
It's quite a unique appointment directly into the cabinet of local government. You've seen authorities in Manchester, the AGMA Authority, the Association of Greater Manchester Authorities, set up something called a Business Leadership Council. But this is altogether different. This is actually getting somebody from outside to join the running of the city. It's very, very ambitious. And depending on who they appoint, and we can discuss that later, I think it seems like a very positive move.
Tony, you've obviously been around the Liverpool business community and the political community for a number of years now. Do you think that was an important signal for Joe to send out about a Labour council? I don't want to sound too much like Neil Kinnock, but, you know, a Labour council comes into Liverpool, the first thing that people start to think is it going to be business friendly?
Well, the first thing that people need to know is, Frank, that you don't look like Neil Kinnock, so that's all right. But it's right, because in the 80s, a lot of business leaders and a lot of investors would have been fairly nervous about a Labour council. However, Joe has, you know, assured myself as a Conservative, but also other members of the business community, that he doesn't want to go back, and that's a good signal to have. But the important thing is that the City Council sends a message out to investors in the business community, not just in Liverpool and the North West, but in the world, that Liverpool is a good place to invest in, a good place to do business, and the new City Council will be responsible with our city finances and not cut fast and loose.
Mm. Michael, you mentioned the Business Leadership Council over in Greater Manchester. How much of an influence do you think those individuals have on policy and strategy there?
I think what this Business Council's done is it's formalised an informal arrangement where there is a regular dialogue between people in the private sector, often property developers, for instance, people who the leadership of the City Council, both the executives and the elected members, have a regular dialogue. And this has just formalised that, but at a Greater Manchester level. It's far too early to say whether they've had any direct input, but as I said, it's already a dialogue that's already happening.
I suppose what we'd say is anything that opens the channels of communication between the public and private sectors, it can only be a good thing, can't it?
It can, but it's interesting to know what's going to happen now. Will other interest groups want to be represented? Would a trade union representative like to join the leadership of Liverpool's cabinet, for instance? Maybe they'd argue that because the Labour Party are running it, they already have. What about the third sector, which is particularly strong in Liverpool, that represents a lot of people?
Yeah,
I think it starts to ask a lot more questions, and if it's going to be effective, it's all dependent on who is appointed and what process that person's chosen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be difficult for Joe and his team actually to come to a final decision on that. I mean, I think what Joe has said, and to an extent understandably so, is that it's up to the business community to decide. But then there's no formal process or procedure for us to do that. And I think basically what's happening is soundings are being taken out, and we hope to come to a conclusion whereby an individual is named who we can all generally support. I mean, Tony, again, I think, you know, you will have been one person who's had conversations about this.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, they had the Gordon Brown had this idea of the government of all the talents, the goats. Well, it looks like Joe Anderson's got the coats, the council of all the talents. So I don't know who's going to be the coat, but I think we'll find out very soon. But I would suggest that there are several high-profile business leaders within the city who have experience of both the public and the private sector and can build bridges between those two sectors. You know, again, I wouldn't particularly want to name names and put people in, but there are several people who could do a good job.
Oh, I would. Go on, Tony. Don't be shy.
I was going to say, Michael, what do you think? What are your thoughts? And he says, batting it straight back.
Well, we've got two of you on the line now. I mean, you're both prominent politically. You both run businesses. You're both very passionate about advancing the cause of Liverpool as a city to do business in. Come on, I'm sure you both love to do that.
Well, thanks, Michael. The check's in the post, but I might have a few too many things to do anyway. But
no. Yeah, I know you've got businesses to run, and in there, to make a serious point, lies the danger of it. The reason a lot of business people don't get involved in politics, it just takes up too much time. I mean, it is, and in all the meetings, the visits they'll have to do, what will they have to do? All in addition to running a profitable business and making sure people get paid every month.
I mean, when the announcement was made, somebody wrote up to the Daily Post a letter that was sent through to me on email from one of our members, basically said, "Oh, who's this business representative going to be then? Some unelected guy. Will we have to call him Lord McKenna of Liverpool?" Which I thought was
quite a good ring to
quite it, a right? Nice ring to it. But it won't be me. Listeners will be relieved to know. I think what you've said there, Michael, about somebody who runs their own business is important, in my opinion, in respect of this post, because, you know, there are lots of business organisations out there, downtown Liverpool among them. But actually, if we could get somebody who is a business practitioner who has everyday experience of the difficulties, the issues, the challenges that businesses face, that somebody will be far more effective in representing businesses' views than, you know, somebody, as I say, who heads a business organisation.
Someone like you, as opposed to...
Well, yeah. You know, I think, you know, my personal view is there's people around who've been... I mean, the guy who runs TJ Morris, mm-hmm. you know, he's been involved in things very successfully here. We've had people involved at the Mersey Partnership. I think, you know, Rod Holmes has been a great appointment as chairman over there. We've had David Wade Smith involved in things across the city. And again, you know, these people are all used to day-to-day running of businesses. And that's why I think, you know, that there's enough candidates yeah. who actually run their own businesses and can actually combine that with this new role that Joe Anderson has brought forward.
No, I completely agree with you. And you can add to that list maybe people who haven't necessarily got us involved. There's a fantastic business called Medicash. I'm not mentioning them for any other reason than I'm very impressed with their chief executive, Sue Weir.
Yeah. Yeah.
It always seems to be white guys in ties who get suggested for these sorts of jobs. But Sue's passionate about Liverpool and runs a very successful business that's run on mutual lines. And that, again, is part of the whole mood music of the new Cameron government, isn't it? That there are different ways to run businesses rather than just straightforward limited companies. And then, of course, you've got lots of other, as I said, white guys in ties who... Maybe the grandees of the city, people like Guy Wallace or Steve Burrows, who you know, very proud to represent the city on an international stage, who you know, have a few grey hairs to show for their experience, and maybe that wisdom, that ability to see the long game, might be quite a useful ingredient in a cabinet running the city.
Mm. Well, no shortage of candidates, that's for sure, and I'm sure whoever Joe eventually selects for that role. Will have the full support of the business community and we'll get right behind him or her. Moving on, Michael, you mentioned the new government there and this coalition that's being put together. Are you optimistic about how it's going to operate?
I'm an eternal optimist, Frank. I really am. And I think this is the best possible outcome. And I think the spirit in which the Conservatives have entered into this coalition, they could have done a minority government, frankly. Mm. I think they were that close to having a majority. They could have tried to muscle through some of the programme that they were almost elected on with a bit of tacit support and a few concessions, but they haven't. I think fully embracing the Lib Dems. We've had Vince Cable up in the North West this week, of course. Nick Clegg on the front bench. Another North West MP, Andrew Stunnell, getting the local government brief. I think they've proved that they've drawn drawn their coalition partners fully into the heart of the government. And it seems that Cameron hasn't made too many concessions to the right of his party, which, to be honest with you, would have been my great fear, because the weakest government of my living, of my life, was the last years of the Major government, where as a concession, as a bone to the Tory right, they threw... possibly the most disastrous policies in post-war Britain of rail privatisation.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had to see it through, because if he didn't, he'd have to confront something like leaving the EU, which was, he clearly wasn't going to do. So I'm very heartened by that, and I remain very optimistic.
Mm. Tony, as you know, with your Conservative Association hat on, how is this coalition arrangement being received among the rank and file?
Well, as you'd expect at the beginning, there was a little bit of scepticism. I'm sure you'd understand that, you know, essentially it wasn't what any of the activists of any of the parties, either Conservatives or Liberal Democrats, had campaigned for. But what you have to admire is, as Michael said, the courage of both David Cameron and Nick Clegg to take this on, to do what was best in the interest of the country and not just in the interest of their own party, and to get stuck in. And they're having a really good go of it. You know, the internal memos that are coming around, this is not a fudge, this is not a farce, this is a genuine attempt at a coalition government that they hope will last for 5 years. And that's exactly what the country needs now, some strong leadership, some strong government. As Michael also mentioned, with the major years, had Cameron gone alone, George Osborne on Wednesday night spoke to the CBI and spoke about that could have been a potential opportunity. But in reality, that wouldn't have been an opportunity, because the government probably would have fallen very quickly, because there's no way they'd have got through everything that they wanted to. So fair play to David Cameron. He's played a very good hand. He's played the hand he's dealt very well. And also, you know, a lot of respect goes out to Nick Clegg and to the Liberal Democrats, who've had the courage to set aside one or two of the long-standing convictions to do what's best in the needs of the country, and hopefully will be in the needs of this region too.
Now, in terms of the new government, and it wouldn't have mattered who had been elected on May the 6th, we knew that there was going to be a cuts programme around the corner to start to tackle this UK budget deficit. But clearly, you know, there are particular issues here in the northwest and on Liverpool, on Merseyside, that have been flagged up as potential targets for those cuts. Again, Michael, are you someone who is actually looking forward to that programme of reductions being presented, so at least we know where we stand? Or are you somewhat dreading the experience?
A bit of both, really. I'm sure we've all got friends and neighbours who might lose their jobs over some of the cuts that are going to be made, and that's not pleasant. But I think the sooner that the country takes the very harsh medicine that it has to take will be better in the long term for the future of all of us and for our children.
And do you agree that the sooner we get started, the better? Or is there an argument that was proposed actually by the Lib Dems and the Labour Party, it has to be said, before the election, that to cut too soon might actually see us go into a double dip recession?
They've got the ability to look at the data. Every government always looks at efficiencies. I think I wish I had a pound for every time a politician's gone up and said, cut back office functions, defend frontline services, cut paperwork. They all want to do that. And now they've got to go ahead. You know, government is incredibly wasteful. The public sector is incredibly inefficient and wasteful. And the private sector has had to take some tough medicine, as I said. People have had to take pay cuts. They've seen colleagues being made redundant, cost cuts to budgets, extending terms to suppliers. It's been part and parcel of the business of running a business during a recession. So there's no reason on earth why the public sector shouldn't have to do that as well. And I think it can be done. £6 billion to take out of this deficit is a drop in the ocean. Personally, I'd like to see every government department, every minister, just be told 10%. Just go away and do it. 10%. Don't tell me how. Just do it.
Yeah, you just mentioned a point that I meant to raise earlier when we were talking about the new leadership at Liverpool City Council. Colin Hilton, of course, has announced his retirement. And again, there's been some comment about who his successor is going to be, and in particular, the salary that's going to be offered. And I was a little bit surprised, actually, that the local media have said that we should be paying the successor top dollar, because surely we are in a place now where future appointments are actually going to see those sorts of salaries reduced. Yeah, why should we be paying 200,000 plus for people who are running councils when the Prime Minister's taken a 5% pay cut? I mean, I don't know what your view of that is, Tony.
Well, again, we've got to be careful. We want to make sure that the people that are going to run the City Council, which is, you know, a significant organisation, have the ability and the talent and the experience to actually do a good job. However, we are in an elected arena in terms of council decisions and decisions that local politicians have got to make. And unfortunately, your argument is very strong. How on earth can the leader of Liverpool City Council get paid more than the Prime Minister? It does seem bonkers when you look at it like that. So it's important that we get somebody in that actually has the ability and the talent, and we pay them a fair market salary. But we also need to be realistic about the fact that, you know, money's not growing on trees. We are living in difficult circumstances, especially as in the public finance arena. And we've got to make sure that we cut our cloth accordingly.
And I think what winds people up in the private sector particularly is, and I'm sure you hear this all the time, Michael, is the pensions and the pension schemes that people in the public sector enjoy.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, all I can say is, as it chimes through this whole election campaign we just had recently, I agree with Tony.
It's got a nice ring to it, that, Michael. Thank you very much.
Yeah. People used to say that about 13 years ago as well, but it was a totally different Tony. Well, Michael, I know you've got to go because the time's running out for us, but thanks very much for joining us this morning and giving us your comments on what the future holds with this new coalition government.
Very much a pleasure, Frank. Thank you very much for asking.
Well, that was Michael Taylor from Insider Magazine, and thanks very much for him to joining us this morning. Still with Tony Caldera. Tony, some interesting points made there from Michael about needing to get on with this budget cutting. And yeah, we have had some speculation about where we're up to as far as Liverpool and Merseyside are concerned, with projects such as the Second Crossing the new Liverpool hospital, those sorts of projects apparently being targeted for cuts. Do you think that's a fair assessment of where we're at, or do you think that speculation is a little bit off the mark?
I think it's very unfair, Frank. I think that for the press to start talking about £2 billion worth of cuts when George Osborne and Vince Cable and the rest of the new Treasury team have talked about £6 billion across the whole economy in the first year, which is only 1% of government spending, is a little bit off the mark. I think it's a little bit desperate, really. I think what we need to keep into context is the fact that there are going to be some difficult decisions which need to be made. And, of course, some people are going to be upset, but really we are dealing with the biggest peacetime deficit that the country has, and things do need to be sorted out fairly quickly. But I can't see all of the projects that have been highlighted all not going ahead. I think that would be highly unlikely, and I think that the speculation is a little bit exaggerated.
I suppose what I'd say is, if you were looking at this from the government's point of view, I think, you know, the second crossing, yeah, great scheme, and in the good times, something that we could all support. Similarly, you know, any new hospital facilities in any city are welcomed. But when you look at the size of the health economy in the Northwest, and indeed across the Liverpool City region, and when you look at the transport infrastructure and perhaps some of the other work that needs to be done around the city and the city region, it wouldn't be a surprise, would it, if those projects certainly came under some scrutiny?
Well, inevitably, I think, you know, it's going to be the responsibility of any new government and the new Treasury team to look at all the different projects, especially the ones that were announced late in the Labour administration, because, you know, sometimes there is a little bit of political manoeuvring here on behalf of the outgoing government, perhaps setting the expectation bar a little bit too high, only so that they could criticise the government for not delivering plans which were never actually going to be implemented in the first place. So it's very important that people keep that in context and don't get hysterical. You know, the last thing we want to do is, you know, is for the Liverpool media and the Merseyside media to start, you know, alarmist propaganda and alarmist reports to say, actually, you know, cuts, same old bad old Tories, dodgy Lib Dems. I mean, really, we've got to look at the situation that is in front of us, which is a terrible black hole in the public finances, which is too much borrowing, most of which has happened in the last 6 or 7 years. And we've actually got to address the problems that are in front of us. We can't put our heads in the sand. But by the same token, we also have to be realistic, not to go too far, too fast, because there is an inevitable risk of going too far, too fast. Now, George Osborne has already set out some credible plans to take £6 billion out of the equation this year, which is only 1% of all government spending. Now, as Michael Taylor said earlier, it's very difficult. It will be very difficult for a lot of public sector agencies, local authorities, Whitehall departments, not to be able to find 1% of savings within their huge, huge budgets. Of course, it's going to be uncomfortable, and inevitably there will be some people that will lose out because of it. But the country can't go on borrowing money in the way that it has done for the last few years. We've got to be responsible. We've got to live within our means. And let's hope that there aren't too many axes fall in this region. And let's hope that that the new government managed to strike a balance between maintaining frontline public services and maintaining the real projects, that the infrastructure projects that this region really needs, rather than other ones that would be nice to have in the good times, as you mentioned, but may not be top priority.
I mean, what I'd like to see in terms of an approach from Liverpool and indeed the North West region is a more considered approach, if you like. I mean, I've seen some of the headlines that the local media ran last week, and I don't think they're doing anybody any favours. I think we all have to accept that there will be a period of time now where the country is going to see our cloth cut accordingly, if you like. And, you know, when I look across the piece, the only thing I think that we can lobby for and campaign for is fair treatment. So if the cuts appeared to be heavier in the north than they were in the south, then I think we've every right to complain and to shout and scream about that. But at this moment in time, you know, I actually would like to see us and our civic leadership in particular being a bit more proactive and saying to the government, well, look, these are the areas that we think you can find and identify savings. I don't think it should necessarily be a top-down approach. I think there needs to be an involvement of public agencies at a local level.
Well, I think consultation at this important time is really important because, you know, local authorities, local government, people will have an idea of what their priorities are and what they believe that the citizens and the people of this city and this region, what their priorities are too. And it is important that people get their heads together and find out what needs to be done. But make no mistake about it, let's be clear that these savings that have to be made because we can't carry on spending and borrowing money that we simply haven't got. Ultimately, it'll be our children, our children's children that have to pay for it. So we're going to have to take the difficult decisions, which unfortunately the last government didn't take, and get on with actually balancing our books again as soon as is physically possible.
I suppose the one area that I have expressed concern over a long period of time now is this idea that local authorities will be given the responsibility and the powers around issues such as strategic planning, economic development, and obviously with that, the demise of development agencies. Now, again, you know, I think that in other parts of the country, a case could be made for the abolition of development agencies, but here in the Northwest, I think the RDAs have been very successful. I say RDAs, the RDA has been very successful. I also think the way in which BusinessLink has been reconfigured and really has been at the forefront of business support. In the absence of that support we spoke about earlier, Tony, in terms of, you know, the banks not really being there to help, I think some of the access to finance stuff that BusinessLink have undertaken has been excellent. My view in the Northwest is that we do have some powerful local authorities, in particular Manchester and Liverpool. And sometimes you need a regional referee. And you know local government in this region as well as I do. You know, sometimes they can't agree what day it is. The idea that those people could be made responsible for economic development policy and strategy frightens the life out of me.
Well, I think if you look at each individual agency on a case-by-case basis, you can justify the position and justify their existence. The problem comes is that there are so many different people and so many different agencies and quangos and organisations that are looking to, you know, to have that strategic input into the debate and into the decision-making process, that what you really need to do is rationalise that number. What you don't want is 7 or 8 different organisations all competing with each other in a kind of twilight zone between public and private sector. What we really need to do is give the taxpayer value for money to make sure that the strategic thinking is more clear and have the likes of an elected mayor to help with this strategic thinking, to have, you know, agencies that actually are more streamlined but are also more effective as well. What we're not saying that actually let's abolish every single quango that goes on in the northwest of England. Of course, each individual one of these organisations on its own account can be justified, but what we do need to do is cut out the duplication and just make sure that the taxpayers and the business rate payers get good value for money, and that ultimately we have the strategic vision to bring investors into our city and into our region and make sure that this region can punch above its weight in not only the region but in the country and internationally too.
I think Michael was saying every government comes in with the intention of cutting red tape, bureaucracy and making savings and efficiency savings, and usually at the end of it the next government says exactly the same. A little bit like that with quangos. And you know, my problem with this is I think part of this is actually around political dogma, and I think development agencies and regions are almost anathema to, you know, the Conservative Party that does see things in a different way politically. All I would plea with the politicians is actually to closely consult with business communities across the country. And one size doesn't necessarily fit all. You know, a development agency in the Northwest doesn't mean to say you need a development agency in Yorkshire or a development agency in the Southeast. But as I say, I just think that regional refereeing role, which the development agency here have managed to play pretty successfully, would be a shame to lose. And, you know, the phrase that strikes me is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, for people who are supportive of the development agency or indeed are on the other side of that argument, I think we can glean some comfort from the fact that George Osborne, has said there will be a consultation over those issues.
Well, that's right, Frank. The jury is still out. You know, there's no decision been made yet. And of course, with the new government being a coalition, there are going to be several sides and several opinions within the government as well as in the region and in the business community on top. So I don't think there's any decision being made. I think there is a general consensus amongst the new government and the new government partners that they are going to try to consolidate the kind of the support that business gets in all regions in the country, not just here in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. And I think that if they can do that fairly and equitably, then that has got to be the best answer. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, there is going to have to be some kind of consolidation, and let's hope that it's as painless as possible.
Mm. I just want to touch briefly before we end, Tony, on that issue of the banks again and Vince Cable's appointment to look after business and banking in this country. What can he do to help things? Because there is massive frustration amongst the business community about the lack of activity of banks.
I think it's quite simple, really. One thing that the Conservative Party and George Osborne and David Cameron in particular have been talking about is this £50 billion bank guarantee, the loan guarantee scheme that that was very successful during the 80s as well. What happens at the moment is the last government asked the banks to both strengthen its balance sheet and lend more money to small and medium-sized businesses at the same time, and they've found real problems with doing this. And of course, I'm not going to sit here this morning and say, actually, you know, the bankers are fine, because of course there are issues there and they need to sort those out. But what we really need to make sure is that the banks have the support of government, and that the loan guarantee scheme is put in place as quickly as possible, so that some of those marginal calls, maybe where it's a 50-50 shout as to whether it was going to go ahead, you may find that if one of the head offices, one of the ivory towers in London where these decisions are made, has the backing of the Treasury, they may be a little bit more forthcoming in actually granting that lending decision. So let's hope that the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrat partners can get this loan guarantee scheme in as quickly as possible, and the banks can then have the confidence to lend to small and medium-sized businesses in this region, and the economy can pick up again.
And without a doubt, those public sector cuts are on the way, so it's absolutely essential that the private sector begins to motor again and we start to create the wealth and create the jobs that are necessary to keep us out of recession.
Absolutely, and especially in this city, in this region, now more than ever we need our entrepreneurs and our business people to take up the slack. There are inevitably going to be some public sector casualties, and it's more important than ever now that the business people are given, especially in this region, are given all the support that they can get to take up that slack. And let's just hope they are supported by the banks and they get the right kind of support from the new government, and that the private sector can help take the economy forward to what are going to be a very difficult few years.
Great. Well, on that note, Tony, we'll have to end it. Tony Caldera, thank you very much for being with me this morning. Thank you to my other guest, Michael Taylor, the editor of Insider Magazine. And thank you for listening. I'm Frank McKenna. This has been Downtown Liverpool City Talks Business. Have a great week. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.